From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
We speak of butterfly plants and of making butterfly gardens, but how well do we really know the diversity of butterfly species that might visit those offerings? Butterflies, and especially how to sharpen our ID skills, are the topic of today's program. But first, this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Dr. Jeffrey Glassberg, author of The Swift Guide to Butterflies of North America, is president of the North American Butterfly Association and an adjunct professor in the Department of Ecology and Evolutionary Biology at Rice University. He's here to help us become keener butterfly watchers. Welcome to the program. I'm so pleased to have you, and I'm so enjoying the book. Actually, this is my second edition of the book, as it is yours.
Oh, good. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So the Swift Guide, and I should say to listeners that we'll have a book giveaway with the transcript of the show, is meant to support us in learning to recognize butterflies. And so it's highly visual. It's kind of different from other guides. Want to tell us a little bit about your approach in the book?
Sure. So when I've written books over the years, I try to ask, what is the purpose of this book? What is it trying to do? And then I try to do everything I can to make it the best for that purpose that I can. And the purpose of this book is to let you identify butterflies, to recognize what the butterfly that you're seeing in your garden or out in the woods or the meadows near your house, what kind of butterfly is it? So rather than have, you know, long wordy treatises on this and that, it focuses on what the butterfly looks like and carefully having arrows that point to the important things that distinguish it from close relatives, and then right there at the arrow telling you what it is that to look for. And then it, of course, gives information that's relevant to identifying it, such as, for example, when it the time of year it flies, it's the range where it flies. So if there's a butterfly that's only found in Florida and you're in California, it's not likely to be that one. So that's relevant to identifying it.
Yes.
Or if I say it only flies in the early spring and it's now the middle of the summer, it's not likely to be that one.
Yeah.
And then we tell what the butterfly uses as its caterpillar food plant, and so that helps reinforce if you find it flying around this plant that it's its food plant, then maybe it's more likely that that's what it is, kind of thing.
Yeah, and the images of the butterflies are butterflies photographed alive on plants, not silhouettes like in many field guides, these disembodied sort of creature on a white background or whatever.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I think that's also useful because you get a better feel about what the butterfly really looks like in the wild and what it might be on and how it holds itself. So that's all relevant, again, to trying to identify it.
Yeah, and I have to confess that I spend a lot of time when I see something that I don't recognize right away in the garden, I go right to the back of the book to this visual index. I don't know, is that cheating? But I use it
no,
a lot.
No, not at all. And I'm glad. You know, everybody approaches things differently. And so my experience has been there's a pretty significant percentage of people, I'm not sure exactly what it is, a third or a half, who, for example, find, as you do, the visual index, very useful. You know, you kind of gets you to the right area in the book.
Yes.
Whereas other people, they don't use it at all. I try to make it so that different kinds of people can, still use it well.
And so what if people don't know what we're talking about? It's little thumbnail-sized, gridded-out thumbnail-sized pictures. There's several pages of them. And so you can kind of visually scan these two or three pages of these little icons, these little thumbnails, and you go, oh, it kind of looks like that. And then you can go to page 207 or whatever and see, in fact, if that's who you've seen. So I just find that really helpful and less overwhelming to me. So, of course, the book is divided, like the, you know, sort of taxonomically, like the world of butterflies, into six families. You know, I think a lot of lay people like myself, especially a lot of gardeners, would say, oh, swallowtails, there's lots and lots of swallowtails, but that's the smallest section, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, there aren't that many, you know, there are many species of swallowtails on the planet, still less than some others, but quite a few. But in most areas of the United States, there aren't that many species of swallowtails, but because they're the largest in size,
yes,
they're the family of butterflies, and most of the individuals tend to be large. They're the kind of butterflies that people notice the most. So if you've got tiger swallowtails flying around your house or giant swallowtails, they're pretty big butterflies,
yes,
and they're hard to not see. Whereas if you have hair streaks or skippers flying around your house, most people would, frankly, would never even notice them.
Right.
So
but
when you do notice them, if you look at them, get a good look at them, which you can easily. They're amazingly beautiful. So looking at butterflies closely, small ones, opens up a whole new world to you.
And some of the so there's five other families. One, I guess the section that was biggest were the brushfoots. So I didn't, I know some commas and some crescents and some fritillaries and some checker spots that I've seen, but I didn't know that they were in that family. So that's another thing that you learn by seeing them with their associated sort of animals.
Yeah, I think the brushfoot family is kind of maybe the least coherent assemblage of any of the others. And, you know, if it's not a swallowtail and it's not a gossamer wing butterfly, you know, and it's not a skipper,
right,
and so forth, then it's likely to be a brushfoot. And the other thing about them is the majority of them, not all of them, but the majority of them tend to be an orangey brown color. So if you think of a monarch, it's a kind of brushfoot. Or if you think of a painted lady or an American lady, those are brushfoots.
Mm-hmm.
So they tend to be orangey brown, and as I say, that's not true of all of them. But they're more varied in terms of size and color than the other groups in North America. I mean, if you look at the rest of the world, the metal marks, which there are very few of in North America, in South America, they're unbelievably numerous and varied in every possible way.
One of the other families are the whites and yellows, and and so that, of course, made me think of my brassica crops and how I loathe the cabbage white butterfly, whose caterpillars like to eat brassicas. Now that's a non-native butterfly species, correct?
One of only a couple.
That's what I was going to ask. How many are really?
Yeah,
because most of the book would be native, yes? Most of our butterfly species would be native, yes?
Almost everything in there, there's only really, I think, well, now it's up to three. In the United States outside of Hawaii, Hawaii has quite a number of non-native established butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
But in the rest of the U.S., well, there's only two in the U.S. and an additional one in Canada. There's a cabbage white,
right,
and there's a butterfly called European skipper.
Yeah.
And now, just a few years ago, another butterfly named common blue has become established in southern Canada and will probably soon enter the United States if it hasn't already.
Huh. So if we were to sort of right now together virtually, if you were going to take me butterfly watching here out loud, should I get my binoculars? Like, what should I do? What's going to equip me to be a better observer? Because they move fast, they're small, frequently they catch your eye from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do we do this? How do we,
So you want binoculars. Ideally, you want binoculars that are close-focusing binoculars, and by that I mean binoculars that when the object, in this case a butterfly, that you're looking at is, let's say, only 5 feet away from you,
mm-hmm,
that your binoculars can focus on it sharply. Most binoculars are built to look far away.
Yes.
And so if you get closer than 20 feet or certainly 10 feet, most binoculars won't be able to focus on them. It'll be all blurry. But because butterflies, you can approach very closely and you'll normally be close to them, you want binoculars that, as I say, certainly focus less than 6 feet, and some go down to almost 3 feet. So you want binoculars. Many people that are into butterflies photograph them because it's really so easy to do. You can use something as commonly available as your cell phone, but fairly inexpensive kind of point-and-shoot type of cameras work awfully well for many butterflies. And then, of course, if you can use, very expensive cameras if that's what you want to use also.
Yeah.
But the other thing you probably want to do is, if you're going to go out into the field as opposed to your own garden, you want to dress appropriately, and you want to do things like tuck your pants into your socks so you don't get things crawling up on you, or you want to wear a hat to keep the sun off you. So there's certain things you want to do.
So, in a bird book, the ornithologist Pete Dunn said something like, birds are almost always where they're supposed to be. Now, and in the book, in the Swift Guide, with each species entry, you have a little habitat note. For instance, this one is from prairies and dunes, or this one's from moist grassy areas. Like, you give us a hint. Are butterflies almost always where they're supposed to be? Like he says,
more. I would say more than birds. A really large percentage of birds migrate, so when they're migrating, you could almost find them anywhere. When they're breeding, then they're more habitat dependent. Whereas butterflies, very few species of butterflies migrate. A few do, as almost everyone knows, monarchs do, and there's a few others that do also. But the great majority don't really migrate. They just live where they are, or they kind of randomly move around. And almost always, you would find them in the habitat where they are. So if you're looking for Hessel's hairstreak, if you just randomly were looking, you'd spend your
whole
life
marching around the universe looking
without ever seeing one, because they're only found in Atlantic white cedar bogs.
Okay.
So if you want to find Hessel's hairstreak, you basically have to go to Atlantic white cedar bog. And that's the fun thing about butterflies, is that much more so than birds, they're not only in much even more specific habitats, but their ranges tend to be much smaller. And so you have to basically, if you wanted to see all the butterflies of North America, you'd have to go to almost every state. Whereas, for example, if you're looking for birds, you could see almost all the species in a year by visiting maybe five spots.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas butterflies, you kind of have to spend many, many years of going back to all the places, because a butterfly may only fly in the Wind River Mountains in Wyoming, and it only flies for 1 week a year. So,
oh my goodness!
Yeah, exactly.
Are you sure this is what you wanted to do for how many years, Dr.
Yeah,
Jeffrey
Glassberg?
Yeah,
well, that's the fun part about it. Really, is that you get to take these adventures. I had to go back there twice. I had to get a horse and go up to 12,000 feet, and where we were a couple of years ago my friend and I were in Alaska for a couple of weeks of flying in on seaplanes into remote lakes in Alaska where there are no roads,
Mm-hmm.
So that's the kind of thing, it's fun. But you don't have to do that. Of course, you can enjoy all the butterflies in your own garden. And so that's the beauty of it. You can just say, well, I'm just going to see what comes into my own garden and have fun that way. Or you can say, I'm going to travel around and see all the butterflies other places too.
Yeah. So when you know, another comparison to birding, which is what I know a little bit more about than butterfly watching. So there's that expression, GISS, jizz, or just general impression of size and shape. So the first thing you want to do. So tell me about that. I'm out there. I see something fly by. I want to sort of zero in on it. What are those sort of hallmark features that you want me to look for?
So let me say first, you know, butterfly, it's like anything else. The more you do it, the more you practice, the better you get at it. So whether it's playing the piano, whether it's playing basketball, whether it's writing, whatever it is you're doing, the more you do it, the better you get at
practice
it.
Practice makes perfect.
that really is completely true. So if you spend a lot of time looking at butterflies, you eventually get to the point where you don't even know what it is. You see it and you know what it is right away. You don't know why. You can't even put it into words necessarily. So you eventually get like that. But before you get there, the place to start is, as you said, is with the idea that there are these six families of butterflies.
Okay.
And so it's really pretty manageable. If somebody went out in the field with me for a day, I think it's fair to say that after the some people are better at this than other people. Some people just can't do it at all, and there's other people that are great, and, of course, most people are in between.
Mm-hmm.
But for an average person, if they went out with me in the field for a day, by the end of the day, they could recognize a swallowtail. You know, they're large, they have a certain kind of flight pattern, most of them have tails, not all of them. You know, most everybody could recognize a white or a yellow. So even, you know, my four-year-old, you know, grandson, you know, would say, oh, there's a cabbage white.
There's a cabbage white.
Exactly. So, you know, and butterflies, of course, they're really named in a very technically onerous way, like the white ones are called whites and the yellow ones are called yellows. So that makes it kind of easy. And the same thing with the other families, with the gossamer wings, which are the hair streaks and the blues. Once you see them, they're small and delicate and have a certain kind of flight, you pretty much start getting, okay, it's in this group. So that's the way you start. You start by recognizing it's a swallowtail, it's a blue, it's in one of these six groups, and then that helps you to get the right place in a book, and then you start, after you do it a little bit more, then you learn the subgroups. You learn, okay, it's not only a gossamer wing, but it's a copper, or it's a hair streak, or it's a blue. And now you've got that subdivision, and then as you get a little bit more experience, you kind of learn the subgroups within that. And so that's how you start, and it's a lot of fun. Basically, you know, there's people that do gardening for butterflies, so it's very relaxing that way. There's people, you can look at it like an active video game. You go out And you're out in the wild in some places where there's literally thousands of butterflies flying around you and flying at you and so forth, and you have to quickly identify all the ones. It's kind of like a video game.
Yeah, you mentioned flight pattern, and I have to confess that every year when the summer's approaching and monarchs and viceroys may be around and they're similar coloration, though obviously, especially to someone like you, quite different. One of the ways I always go and I look up their flight pattern, which is different. It's very different. Even if I'm not close to them, I can sort of infer which one it is. Does that
exactly?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, the monarchs kind of they sail more. They kind of fly
kind
in
of
a
float.
V.
Yeah.
And viceroys fly on tend to be flat wings that they flap in a very shallow way. So, exactly. Once you get some experience, pretty much when I go to somewhere, even where there are thousands of butterflies, it usually takes me something, you know, truly less than a second to be able to know each one what it is.
Mm. So I want to spend, we have, you know, maybe 4 or 5 minutes. I want to spend our time. First of all, I want to say thank you for putting the index of food plants in the back of the book. Again, being a gardener and also trying to learn to identify these relationships between the different species and the plants that they're reliant upon and prefer. That was a great, so you don't only have the species of butterflies, you have the actual food plant separate index plus that visual index I mentioned before. So that's a great thing, too. But I want to talk about the North American Butterfly Association.
Sure.
Tell me about that.
So North American Butterfly Association's largest group of people in North America that are, you know, focused on butterflies, and we're focused on getting people involved with butterflies, educating people about the importance of butterflies, and I'll talk about that in a second, and working to conserve butterflies. So we do all of those things.
Uh-huh.
We conserve butterflies directly. If it wasn't for the North American Butterfly Associations, it's almost certain that Regal fritillaries would be gone from the eastern United States, for example. And we're involved in conserving butterflies. We own and operate the National Butterfly Center down in Mission, Texas, and we have a very big educational center and also conservation center down there. We monitor butterflies. We have the largest database of butterfly abundances in the world. We have chapters throughout the country.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we're involved in all sorts of ways of trying ultimately to conserve butterflies.
Mm-hmm. And is there an equivalent of like eBird, or like a database where I can, as a citizen scientist, contribute my sightings?
We have a site called We Butterfly.
Okay.
And you can go in there and enter your sightings, and it all goes into a database that's used by scientists.
And so the website for the North American Butterfly Association is NABA.org, is that correct?
That's right. The main website is NABA.org, and then the We Butterfly, it's WeButterfly.org.
Just to wrap up, do you have a within this diversity of butterfly species in this book, or well, especially in North America, do you have a particular passion? Because you don't show any prejudice or show off anybody more than another, obviously, in this kind of a book.
Yeah, in all honesty, my favorite butterfly is the one I'm looking at the moment.
Okay, that's like me with plants. Okay, I get it.
One other thing about butterflies that differs from birds, or plants may be like this in some ways, in a different kind of way, is that each one is different. And there's more variation amongst its different individuals of the same species than there are among different bird individuals of the same species. And in addition, the butterflies get worn, they age. So as they get older, they're kind of like people. They get, you know, nicked up and are not thought to be as attractive by other people. And that happens to butterflies too. They get nicked up and more beaten up, so that after they've been flying for quite a while, they may be missing almost all their scales and big sections of their wings, and there's almost nothing left.
Right.
So, but when they first emerge from the chrysalis, all of the butterflies are beautiful. They are in pristine condition. There's usually a residue, a little bit of a oily residue that creates a sheen in the sunshine that just creates all these beautiful effects. So when you see a really freshly enclosed butterfly,
right,
no matter what the species, a little brown skipper, it will be gorgeous. So you kind of look for those. So each time you see a butterfly, you kind of see it for the first time.
Ah, the beauty of youth. Right? I'm so appreciative of your time, Dr. Jeffrey Glassberg, author of A Swift Guide to Butterflies. This is the second edition. And so grateful for the book as well, because as I said, it's been a trusted companion since the first one came out, and I'm loving the new one too. So thank you for making time.
Well, thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Thanks to all of you for listening too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com. or at facebook.com/awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.